Welcome to the Fabric Podcast. This is the final episode of our conversation, Enough. But considering the appetites and attachments that pull us from a sense of enough will be lifelong work. Here's Greg Meyer, along with some others, who will hopefully inspire you to continue grappling with enough together.
Enough. Do you have enough? Of what? Well, I don't know. Anything? Everything? Enough money, stuff, security, friends, time, people who agree with you, national issues trending your direction? And then, do you do enough for yourself, your family, your job, the world, to combat racism, sexism, and all the other isms out there? And are you enough? Enough to not worry about what others think of you, to not worry whether you have and do enough. If you can say yes to all of those enoughs, all I can say is, Jesus, I can't tell you how proud I am that you're listening to my podcast. Thank you. Thank you. I hope it's good enough for you. Okay. But that's only one side of enough, right? I mean, there is another enough, the side that doesn't need, look for, expect, or even want anything more. Rather than insatiable, it's satisfied. It's tranquil, content, fulfilled, at peace. Enough. I'm sure that no matter how hectic and desperate your life may feel, you recognize and have known this side of enough as well. If only this side of enough were as easy to conjure up as the never enough side seems to be in setting up shop inside us. So this is week 6 of Enough, and it's probably enough. In fact, that's exactly what it is. Today, I want to bring in a few more voices of Fabric folks and friends so that we can hear their experiences with enough, both being eaten up by and taming it. After listening to dozens of people's reflections about enough, one of the things that got drummed into me is the danger of judging anyone else's relationship with enough. It's easy for me to look at someone else and see where enough is running rampant in their life. The thoughts that run through my mind when I'm doing that are something like this. Yeah, sure, I struggle with enough sometimes too, but at least I'm struggling. They're just giving in. Yeah, you know, we see ourselves differently than we see others. For them, well, I look at the outside, their actions, their lifestyle, their job, clothes, demeanor, and then I judge their inside, their heart, for what I see outside. But myself, well, I look from the inside. I see my intentions, the battles, the hopes that I have, and I use that to explain away the outside, the appearances of my life. Yeah, it's not fair. The truth is, enough is a struggle. It's a lifelong struggle for everyone. Be gentle with yours. Be gentle with others for their struggles with it. Try not to judge and be slow to give advice. Hearing how you've managed enough in your life may be helpful for someone else, but finger-shaking, advice-giving are not likely to be. And, you know, isn't your need to judge others for their never-enoughness a sign that maybe you've got a little more work to do with it yourself? Yeah. So let's all admit that enough is tough. It's lifelong. It's slippery and hard to hold on to, and it's worth the struggle. So let's be together in it, not against each other over it. Another refrain I heard many times when people reflected about trying to have enough be positive rather than negative in their lives was about gratitude. People would say things like, I felt like I had such a hole in my life, but then I would spend time with my family and be so filled with love and thanks to them that it dissolved any thought about what was missing. Or, I was so devastated, so torn apart that I was just empty. I spent the night that way, and then I started hearing birds singing, and the sun was coming, and I walked outside in my clothes that I still had on from the day before, and it was so beautiful. I was filled with this strange sense of appreciation for the world and life. I don't know what happened. Or the pure, straightforward message a couple people gave me. My mother, or my granddad, or whoever, always told me, before you ever go get anything new, stop and be grateful for what you already have. Because if you aren't appreciative of what you already have, you'll never really appreciate what you get either. Yeah. Gratitude has a power to transform the enough of the insatiable appetite into the enough of contentment. Or, to put it another way, appreciation is the handle that turns off the faucet of not enough. You've probably heard the Bible verse, give thanks in all circumstances. I used to chafe at that phrase. It sounds like what you tell someone you're going to take advantage of. But then I realized it says give thanks in all circumstances, not for all circumstances. There are many things you should never be thankful for. No one, including God, expects you to be thankful for misfortune, sickness, or war, discrimination, sadness, or loss. But in all circumstances is very different. What that is asking is for you to reach for what is possible, to see what is there, not just what isn't there in each and every moment. You can't and shouldn't be thankful for all circumstances, but you can be thankful in all circumstances because life is a gift in and of itself. Gratitude isn't the right thing to do because it's polite. It isn't the right thing to do because God somehow insists that you be that way. Gratitude is the right way to live. It's important because it changes you and it changes your relationship with enough. I heard this message clearly in the words Carol Capistrant sent me.
Well, I've had a lot of changes in my life in the last 6 weeks, and I have not put them to paper nor processed them to the full extent I wanted. So this was an opportunity to address what's gone on and how my life has changed. So the conversation is enough. My Creator has given me enough. Enough wisdom to find a partner who thinks I am enough to love just as I am. A lovely soul who makes me a better person and who allows me to help him be a better person. Together, we have shared enough joy that I could ever hope for. Enough stamina to weather the high-risk pregnancies that made me a mom to two wonderful sons and two great grandkids. Enough fortitude to continue moving forward when faced with loss, whether those we love, dreams abandon, or the career we built together. Enough grace to be resilient and ever-present when family and found family needed to lean on us. Enough wisdom to recognize those wonderful people we can lean on when we needed to. Right now, as I face cancer, I say enough already. But God, you were persistent in giving me enough trips to urgent care to get my notice. You gave me enough tenacity to find the right care team. You must be telling me that my journey is not yet enough. We are not yet done. I know that my husband will be there with enough grace to hold my hair if necessary, if I need that porcelain goddess. I do not know if I will ever see the sights on my bucket list or have the experiences I thought important. But I leave it to you, my God, to tell me when it's time, when my journey is complete. You know I'll fight you like crazy, mad God, until you tell me enough.
Thank you, Carol. I was able to watch Carol as she read these words with tears in her eyes. Enough comes from deep inside, and often at a cost. Another thing I heard in Carol's words were just how tied up enough is with others. Enough is unavoidably communal. Is it surprising that you can't achieve enough by yourself? I mean, we may be unique individuals, but we were created for community. Everything about us says that we are part of something bigger. You may be finding your enoughness inside yourself, not waiting for others to give you their approval or acceptance, but you will still find the meaning of your enoughness through relationship. The real pain of life isn't in what I don't have, therefore not enough of, but in my not sharing what makes up my life with others. The name of our community, our church, our movement is Fabric, and it's that for a reason. It is the woven nature of life that not only gives us strength and resilience, it also gives us joy and meaning and purpose. But it isn't only being woven together as people or with the world, but there is a third strand, we like to say, a third strand of that cord. Listen to these words from the Wisdom Book of Ecclesiastes in the Hebrew portion of the Bible. Two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their toil. For if they fall, one will lift up the other. But woe to the one who is alone and falls and does not have another to help. Again, if two lie together, they keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? And though one may prevail against another, two will withstand one. All that talk of the two. Two are better, stronger than one. But then, at the end, there is this simple sentence added on with no elaboration, no explanation. A threefold cord is not quickly broken. Threefold, not quickly broken. Can I change that, translate that to read enough? A threefold cord is enough. We not only need to be broader by joining together, we need to be deeper by weaving down into that which makes all things, that in which all things find their existence, into that place, not just where wisdom is grasped, but where it actually dwells. Life on the surface, short-term and short-sighted, gets caught up by chasing enough rather than being it. Something needs to wake us up, make us see who we are and see this world so that we can grasp what enough is and where it is found. We need to make it three-dimensional. And how do you do that? How do I do that? Well, when you have grasped it, when you have seen it, when you have felt it, when you have known it, what has that been like? Sometimes we only have to do it for a moment, and that vision of it will stay with us for years. I want to introduce you to a few more folks who have woven themselves into the Fabric community and been invaluable gifts to us. Their stories show some of the perspectives and practices that can help us all with enough. This is Jen Metz.
If we were in person right now, I just imagine myself sitting in a hard metal folding chair among a ring of others filled with everyone listening to this, awkwardly holding my coffee in one hand, waving with the other and introducing myself. Hi, I'm Jen, and well, I am enough. Before you respond in sync, hi, Jen, I just want you to know that being enough has been a struggle of mine for a long time, specifically since stumbling down the path of single motherhood. I've been watching my niece at least once a week throughout the pandemic, and she and my daughter are the best of friends, but it's hard not to take the grape out of someone else's bowl if you only have one left, even if there's a bag of grapes still left in the fridge. I find myself saying to both her and my daughter constantly, "We will always have enough." Well, it was after one of these incidents when I got the email from Greg to write about enough. And it got me thinking about where that phrase, I probably say 45 times a day, came from. After I had my daughter and my husband decided to be with someone else, it was very difficult to let go of my dreams of having more kids, buying a cute little house, and feeling like my family was enough. What I had, just Lenny and me, felt broken, empty, and certainly not enough. I couldn't help but wonder what I could have done differently, how I could have been more, or even how I could have just been enough. Then one late night after a fiasco of a day with my two-month-old, I sat in the rocking chair with my finally sleeping baby in my arms, looked at my reflection in her mirror across the room, and realized I had all I needed, and so did she. That was the first time I told her and myself, we will always have enough. Obviously, this saying is more of a mantra, because it takes constant growth to feel like we have and are enough. But that is my enough story, and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, thank you. As I listened to Jen's story, I was picturing her sitting in that room with Lenny asleep on her lap, glancing up and looking into that mirror and suddenly seeing herself and Lenny and their life differently than she had ever seen them before. What took my breath away was that it wasn't her own mirror that she was looking into. Our own mirrors are often what suck the enough out of us. We look in them and we wonder who we are, what others see. We tend to be so much more critical of our own appearance and our own soul than others ever bother to be. Or else we take their critique and we find it reflected in our mirrors. But Jen, she caught sight of herself in Lenny's mirror, her child's, to whom she is mom, comfort, safety, joy, hope, life itself. If I may use the name God for that third strand, which is what I believe it's trying to point us towards, I think she was seeing her image in God's mirror. She was seeing the image of herself that God sees, another human being created in the image of God. Lovely, precious, irreplaceable, enough. I wish I could hold that mirror up to you right now so that you could see yourself in it. I hope we can hold it up for our children, our friends, and our neighbors. I want us to see the reflection of those that we call strangers in it so that we will realize that they are really friend, neighbor, and family. When we see our own enough, it's easier to see the enough of others. And when we see theirs, it is easier to see our own. Thank you, Jen and Lenny. I learned so much from you. And speaking of learning from others, I also want to introduce you to George Burke. George, could you share with us what these past 15 months have been like for you?
Sure. Thanks, Greg. Well, I'm a nurse and I work as a supervisor, which is kind of like a air traffic controller of the hospital, kind of juggle staff and bed placement for patients. And there was an unrelenting demand for beds. There were a couple months where we saw demand and volume that we'd never seen before. And then along with that, lots of really sick people. On top of that, I had to manage just visitors. I had to make tough decisions about who could even see a loved one that was really, really sick. Needless to say, it was probably one of the most challenging, at least work experiences I've ever had.
And on top of that, Jessie, your wife, came down with COVID as well.
Yes. In March, she contracted COVID. She developed some chronic illness from it.
So all that was stripping you of being enough as a medical person, trying to do what you'd always done of caring for people. And
that's correct. Absolutely. And then you asked me, or just my thoughts about what is enough. And I remember asking you, well, what do you mean? Are we talking with our jobs? Are we talking with our families? And you kind of just said, pick a topic. And for me, it was dealing with work, the pandemic, and then juggling that with my home life as well, because it was challenging and stressful, I think, emotionally.
You were saying that as hard as work was, it was actually easier being there than being home. Tell me about that.
Yeah, that's right. Because it was so unrelenting, the demands there in so many ways, that I just didn't have time to think, you know, this is what I have to do. What's the next thing I'm going to do? And then I'd get home and I'd have this time to think. And that was, it was almost tougher. I felt like I was maybe going to have a panic attack or just incredibly anxious when I was alone with myself and my thoughts.
So what happened?
Well, right. I reached out to some peers who suggested I read a book called Full Catastrophe Living. And I thought, oh, geez, I already got enough darkness in my life. This sure sounds like a pretty heavy subject. Really talks about using meditation to find peace right now, kind of deal with your life moment by moment. So I read it. And there's one part of that just really stuck out to me, where the author mentions, his name is Jon Kabat-Zinn. He says, oftentimes we have a greed for more of what's better and an extreme aversion for the bad things in our lives. And while we're focusing on those things, we're missing what's happening right now. And so meditation is teaching yourself, training your brain, retraining it, I suppose, to enjoy right now, or maybe not even enjoy it, but just let yourself be in the moment.
How did you use meditation, contemplation to help you find that place?
It seems almost impossibly simple. One way at least to do it is you lie down on the floor, you listen to your breathing, and then you visualize your body from your toes up each leg to your torso, up each arm, your neck, your head. You pretend you're breathing through your feet and exhaling through your head, which
sure.
every time I think is makes me laugh a little bit. But I'll be honest, it worked. I don't know.
You know, all the enough sort of questions or too much of the bad stuff, it's all telling you that you want to be someplace else. I want to be there where there's good things happening. I don't want to be there where bad things are happening, which robs me from the ability to be, well, this is where I am. I'm going to have to deal with this, right? I think just coming to grips with the fact that I'm in this body at this place in this time in this situation is a way of affirming that you are who you are and that can be enough.
I agree. It has been a huge help in my life. I will say it requires discipline. It requires habit, a habitual use of that part of my day. And I'm not always good at it, but I keep on realizing I have to do it. Another quote I liked was, you don't have to like to do it, but you have to do it.
Have you found that there are like just abbreviated ways of doing it too?
Just breathing. At work, I'll sit and be by myself and I'll just breathe and I'll literally stare at the wall. Again, not some miraculous antidote for the issues, but at that moment, it gives me a little bit of a respite.
Well, thank you, George. Thank you for the work you're doing. Thank you for striving for figuring out how to work all this enough out.
You know, thanks for addressing these topics. I think, they're important. So I'm glad I could be part of this. Thanks, Greg.
Hit pause right now. Take 20 seconds or 2 minutes, whatever you got, and do the body scan that George described. Make it one of the tools in your belt that help you with your enoughness. And remember, practice it when it's easy so that you have the skill you need when it's not, right? Okay, so go ahead. Take that pause now. Jen's mirror and George's meditation can help loosen your attachment and ease your fear of what isn't so that you can simply be. At least long enough to say thank you to life and step back up to the plate, because you do have to step back up to the plate. Life goes on, and so will you. Contentment, being enough, isn't a substitute for growth. It isn't earplugs to the sound of change. It is the quietness within you that lets you hear it more closely, a steadiness of footing that allows you to accept the challenges. These practices help you see the big picture of all three strands, not the lonely, never enough picture of just yourself, but yourself as part of all that is, woven into all things. Loving God with all your heart and your soul and your mind and your strength and your neighbor while you love yourself. Now, each week, as we've talked about enough, we've had a big question. We started with, what is enough? And the next week it grew into, what am I trying to fill myself with in order to be and have enough? Which showed the deeper question, what is this hole inside me that I'm trying to fill? The next step was to question that whole approach of enough and wonder this. What if there never was a hole inside me that needed filling in the first place? Last week, we asked, what if I fulfilled myself by pouring out of, not into, myself? Today, one last question. What is my role in the three strands of enough? What is my role in the three strands of enough? You can't do it alone. You need the other strands. And when are you the other strand for someone else's weaving? And when are you the one to hold the mirror to someone else so that they can see the image of God within themselves? What is your role in the three strands of enough? Because when you have those three, sure, life's not done and or complete. There's much left to do, injustices to correct, sadness to mourn, hopes to fulfill. But when you have those three, there is enough. And when you have enough, what else do you need? Which reminds me of where we started 6 weeks ago when I was talking with my old sage of a friend and sailing compadre Reeve Hutchinson, who started us off with a riddle that he said maybe held the key to enough. But Reeve, you wouldn't tell us the answer to the riddle, so I thought now at the end we could figure it out together.
Yeah. So, well, remember we started with, what does one love more than life?
What do you love more than life? I mean, hard to come up with anything better than life. What do you think, Reeve?
Oh boy, if you, you know, my boat, I love the Red Path more.
Yeah. Summer wind for me. Okay. So the answer to that one is sailboats, right? Okay.
Yeah, what does one love more?
Next line is wrong. Could be wrong. Well, we got five more lines. We'll figure it out. What do you fear more than death or mortal strife?
An angry wife.
And it rhymes. So that must be, no.
It seemed natural.
No, maybe it's not. Probably wrong. Fear more than death or mortal strife.
I can't think of anything either.
Okay.
Yeah, it's probably nothing. Huh? I don't know.
Nothing that I would, yeah.
Yeah.
What do the poor have the rich require? What do the poor have? They don't have much.
No. So if nothing. They don't have anything, well, then what do the rich need? I don't know. It's a tricky one.
The poor have it, the rich need it. So, okay. What do all contented souls desire?
Happiness.
No, they're already content.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So they're already happy. So beyond that, well, I mean, what else could they desire, huh? Anything?
If they're content, they shouldn't be desiring anything. So I don't think they desire anything. Next line. What does the miser spend and the spendthrift save? Misers don't spend anything and spendthrifts never save anything. So.
Zippo. Nothing. Zippo. Nada.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey.
Yeah.
We said that word a couple times. What? And then the last line, and all people carry to the grave. What do you take to the grave with you?
Oh, guilt?
No, you leave that behind.
That's in your will.
Well, you give that to your kids.
Excellent. They always say you can't take it with you. So I don't know. I don't know.
I think so.
Let's go with that, Greg.
Okay.
I think you're really going to. Yeah, that sounds good to me.
All right. Thanks, Reeve. Hey, have a good day.
Yeah, you too.
Okay. So then nothing it is. Yeah. Okay. You know what? When you have enough, what else do you need? Nothing. Nothing because, as Reeve is also fond of saying, when you have enough, you in some strange way already have everything. Everything that matters, that truly matters, which is why it's so important to get a handle on enough in your life. Because if you don't, it will drive you to try to do and to be and to have things that don't matter, and it's going to do it at the expense of the things that do. But enough will bring tears to your eyes and hope to your heart. It will see the one world and the one you that is, not just the many that aren't. You are enough.
For this conversation to have all the richness it could, share this podcast with a friend and find discussion resources at fabricmpls.com. We always love hearing from you through our contact page or on social media. And if you want to share those more personal thoughts about enough and what it is in your life, email those directly to Greg at enough@fabricmpls.com. It's worth this quick reminder that who you are is enough. We may not often feel it, but that's part of the reason we do this together. Life woven deeply.